We got Chief Kikovich of the Slapahoe Nation. Yes. Charlie and I first met at the beginning of the summer before we entered kindergarten 58 years ago.
What?
Alone and bored.
Damn.
Messing around in the woods across the street from my house. He came up to me to apologize for hitting me with a rock the day before. It was a case of mistaken identity. I didn't tell him it wasn't me because I didn't want him to go off looking for the other kid to make friends with him instead of me.
All right.
I invited him to play with my Tonka trucks in the inside yard of my parents. My parents let me do what I wanted with. I guess there's kind of a weird word salad there. I had all the equipment. Most of it, like my clothes, was hand-me-downs. Thus began a lifelong bromance. We were called Cisco and Poncho because we always rode together.
Nice.
He lost his father in the first grade. Ooh, damn. Mm. One day, my father took a belt to both of us. You may have might have deserved it. I don't
That's
know.
Old school, man.
He had caught Charlie and me taking lumber from a construction site right next to the woods to build a treehouse there.
Yeah, you get ass whipping for that. That's just...
After a good whipping, Dad made us put it all back. When Charlie's mother heard about it, she came over to thank my father. After that, Charlie always wanted to be around to help when my father was working on either of our family cars.
Nice.
That was what got him on the road to owning his own garage, employing 8 mechanics. My dad knew that left to himself, I'd turn out to be alone. Left to myself, I'd turn out to be a loner, and I needed that friendship because it was my first and my only close one. So Charlie was always included in trips to night games at Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, Misquamicut. I can't even pronounce that state beach in Rhode Island, etc. We became brothers. My dad already had 10 kids with one more to come. No pun intended.
That's one hell of a worn-out whistle sack.
You need a fucking dryer the size of a Ferris wheel. Just
don't take her to Chicago in the fall, man.
No kidding. So it was a big thing he did for both of us. Our mothers were able to arrange it so that we were in the same classroom through all 12 years in Catholic school. What harm could that do? We found a stash of porn cleaning out an old lady's basement.
Yeah!
At my mother's behest.
Yeah!
One early June day before fourth grade, Charlie's mother caught him with a Playboy.
So
my presence saved him from an ass-whipping, but what happened was worse.
Oh, no.
She made him sign up for altar boy training. He told me, I'm fucked. I corrected him. No, we're fucked. So we soon realized that we could put up a pious front to hide behind, and eventually we raked in good tips for serving at weddings. During eighth grade, we took 20-ounce wineskins to church every week to fill with communion wine to get buzzed on after Mass every Saturday.
You are going to get a harsh talking to when you get to see, when you stand before the man. I'm just saying, what were you thinking?
Yep.
It's just fucking wine. Who cares?
Communion wine is high-quality sherry. When we figured out that two of the three priests in the parish were raging alcoholics who were drinking copious amounts of the stuff, we started lifting it by the gallon and charging friends to drink with us so we could pay for what we took by tossing the money into the collection plate.
Well, yeah, that's cool.
We stayed with it until we were 18, when we could get what we wanted in the package stores. Mm. Our parents also let us have a later curfew than what we would have otherwise had because we were just such good boys. Mm-hmm. If Sister Simon Marie, who kept the parish books, noticed anything wrong, she would have thought that the priests were drinking more and just ordered more. Sister Simon Marie, a.k.a. Simon Bar Sinister, our fourth grade teacher, was older than Angkor Wat and a degenerate of the highest order who put misbehaving boys under her desk while she taught class. I'm going to read this whole email. This is entertaining as fuck. She liked to hike up her habit to show that she wasn't wearing panties and diddle herself. What the? One day, she put Slater, a dweeb who always followed the rules, down in hell, as her victims called it, for no more reason than she wanted to torment him. As his sobs became audible from down there, a look of rapture overcame her.
Oh, no.
I didn't know it at the time, but that was her O face. By day's end, Charlie and I had formulated a plan to put an end to her reign of terror. He was as pissed as I was. This is fucked.
Oh, my God.
Next day, when the classroom was empty at recess, after putting down a newspaper to catch the shavings, I started chiseling the wood panel over the dowels, holding the front of her desk in place while Charlie stood watch. Oh, shit.
Nice.
It took 2 weeks to carefully remove enough oak using a gloved hand to drive the chisel through the wood. Later, we deliberately got into trouble for using pea shooters in class, so we would both be stuffed down there. The plan was for us to fall through the front in mock horror when she got her habit way up and had her fingers jammed into her withered snatch. Ooh. First, she hooked her feet around the front legs and moved her butt to the edge of the chair. Her inner lips hung down like two deflated balloons.
Oh, God, that's some beef and cheddar shit right there.
As that horrid stench, we later called it wolf pussy, came rolling out of the crack of doom like a swarm of angry hornets, and we saw what so traumatized our classmates. The horror was real. We busted out the front panel, falling flat on our backs to reveal the old swamp donkey in all her glory to the girls in the front row. It took a slow count of three for her to realize what happened and stop flogging herself. In her panic, she could not unhook her feet from the chair legs or get her habit down for another few seconds. When the police chief's daughter, who was sitting directly in front of her, open legs told her parents, she was removed from the classroom and confined to the convent. She should have been confined to a 6x6 cell.
Yeah, that's some fucked up shit right there.
The school administration had to have known about her for years. Even though the boys I knew never told their parents, the story was passed down by her former male students, and we all found out about it from the fifth graders on day one while waiting for the school doors to open. The summer of 78, after my graveyard adventures, I had a dry spell from March until mid-June the following year and told Charlie I was thinking about going to the King's Den for a BJ. He said he had a better idea. Oh, God.
Here we go.
And on the following Friday at around 3 o'clock, he took me on a train ride into Manhattan. We disembarked at Grand Central Terminal and walked to the Pan Am building in time for the end of the workday. This was a massive office building full of secretaries and receptionists who worked for image-conscious companies. At quitting time, the crowd out front was salted with more pretty women than could be found almost anywhere. It was about to get interesting. He said he wanted to try out an idea that he had had a few days earlier that resulted in another story my wife should never hear about. A decade before Trump wrote The Art of the Deal, Charlie mastered The Big Ask.
Okay.
He selected a couple in skirts, walked up to them, and said in a faux New Orleans accent, "Y'all wanna fuck?" They cussed him out in stereo and marched off at double time. I turned to him and said, "Are you nuts? You can't do that."
It's a numbers game.
Charlie, who could overcome almost any objection with a simple question or two, said, "Who says?" Supposing they had said yes. There was no arguing against that, so I offered no further protests.
I like it.
After four repetitions, he was warmed up. He was moving from one pair to the next without bothering to listen to them tell him what an asshole he was. Not a minute after the wave from the upper floors hit the sidewalk, we were sharing a cab Charlie hailed with two very attractive Asians who usually took public transport back to their place on the south end of the island. We stayed until Sunday morning after switching partners Saturday night. Okay, I'm not really
some true Eskimo brothers there.
We banged these two women, Arlene and Lynn, dry. Charlie gave him the 10 dick, and I gave the black booty trained graveyard dick. He understood something I did not, that women have big mouths about their sexual adventures and loved to boast about their weekends.
Yes, they do.
That helped close other deals. That summer and autumn, when Arlene and Lynn were busy, we spent Fridays hunting on the sidewalks in front of various skyscrapers. That winter, it was hookups with a few of the cooler pairs we had previously spent a weekend with. When spring came, we were back on the sidewalks in front of major office buildings. This went on until 1983. I have a lot of Charlie stories, but these are two of my favorites. I'm still on the road with my wife and my friend's ashes. The trip is already going longer than I expected, but as any married man can tell you, mission creep is a thing, and damn it, it's still a beautiful country. Uh-huh. Steinbeck would be amused by my version of Travels with Charlie.
That's awesome.
That is an outstanding.
Watch Grunt-speak live every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And if you'd like to join Pop for Supporter Sundays, consider making a donation on Locals, Patreon, or Subscribestar.